the canine condition. Come, sit, stay. Welcome to season two of the Canine Condition Podcast. I am your host, Jackie Pignol. Each episode is a conversation with a trustworthy dog rescue organization or animal welfare advocate that will leave you inspired and empowered. This is the why, where, and how to adopt or help a canine family member. The goal is to save homeless dogs and set you up for success with information and resources to raise and keep a healthy and well-balanced dog. Embark on this journey with me, and let's save humans' best friend together. Honesty, integrity, and trust. When you hear those words, does your heart smile? Do you feel a sense of hope and peace within your being? If just the sound of those words doesn't do it for you, then perhaps listening to this episode's conversation will help spark up that hope, joy, and positivity. My guest on the podcast today is Kelly Jacobson, the Director of Operations of HIT Living Foundation, a 501c3 licensed nonprofit animal rescue organization based in Los Angeles, California, and the Bahamas. HIT. H for honesty, I for integrity, T for trust. These are the three main pillars of HIT Living Foundation's mission. The members of the organization strive to live by these ethos within their work with the foundation and in their personal lives. The HIT Living Foundation has come to fruition through the willingness to act on compassion for others with open hearts and objective minds. HIT Living is a lifestyle choice, one that can be made by each and every one of us through mindfulness of our decisions and how we use our time. This organization's team focuses its energy in the areas they feel the world needs it most: animal and human welfare, and they do so by providing financial, physical, and emotional assistance during times of crisis, and most importantly, by making a daily effort to implement small acts of kindness. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Kelly Jacobson. Welcome to the Canine Condition Podcast, Kelly.
Thank you, Jackie, so much for having me. This is very exciting.
I would like to let my listeners know how I found out about HIT Living Foundation. So, you know those neighborhood apps where people will post what's going on in the neighborhood and things like that? So I don't personally belong to any of those, but my husband has one. And there was an alert on our neighborhood one once where a woman said, "Oh my goodness, I've come across these two puppies. They are unwanted. They were from a backyard breeder. And I'm trying to save them, but I cannot keep them. So I have my own dogs. And my husband happens to be out of town for 3 days, but he will not be okay with me having these dogs here when he gets back." So she put her phone number. I said, "Please help." And a lot of people were making suggestions, but I don't know that anyone was particularly involved in rescue. So Johnny, my husband, yay, I've had a good influence on him. So
go
I'm
Johnny.
Proud.
You gotta love our boys.
Yeah, right. He sent it to me and he goes, "Hey, you might want to guide this person in the right direction. Maybe you can help her. She's in our neighborhood." So I called her, super sweet, and she didn't know what to do with these two puppies. So I started sending messages out. I told her, you know, how to reach out on Instagram or Facebook in order to try and explain the situation. And as we started to reach out to rescues in the local area, my friends and one of her contacts came up with HIT Living Foundation on the list. And I had never heard of the HIT Living Foundation, but my friends are like, "They're really good. They're local. Just try them. If they have a foster, they might be able to help." And before I even did anything, she came up with a contact that got to you guys, and you guys had said, "Yes, we're going to scramble for a foster if she can hang on to them for like a day or two," which she could. And that was these two, I think they're, is it Basenji puppies?
So yeah,
Tempe and Gilligan. You know who I'm talking about.
Yes. Oh yes. My gosh. I didn't know you were so involved in their, like, in getting them, you know, alerted or advocating for them.
Yes. And I followed their posts and I shared them. And, you know, we just wanted to make sure. I asked her if she had transportation, if they were being picked up and all that stuff. And she was, you know, eternally grateful and so happy they were saved, because clearly they didn't come from somewhere where they were going to thrive if they stayed there.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So to give you, they're one of my favorites. I actually live in Sherman Oaks and the woman is in Studio City. And so when we got the information, I think it was on Instagram, it was a DM. And so we connected with her. And then just essentially anytime you have like owner surrenders or strays, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You're kind of piecing together all of these different puzzle pieces to get like the finished product. And so, you know, I was messaging with her and just was, you know, trying to put it together. Like, were these your dogs? Were these friends' dogs? How did you come about them? And apparently they were in Pacoima, just living in a backyard. The gentleman had a bunch of other animals, but was only willing to give Tempe and Gilligan away. So I met her at her house, and you're right, her husband was out of town, and she was like, he's going to kill me if he knows that they're here. And she was so sweet, and she's actually since sent us a couple dogs that we've been able to help as well. So Tempe and Gilligan, I don't know if you, it's on our Instagram for all the listeners, Hit Living Foundation, but they had such severe allergies that the whites of their eyes were red. They looked like vampire dogs.
Like, whoa, no way.
So they had to get an eye ointment and eye drops that had steroids in it to kind of like bring the inflammation down. And then once we found fosters, Tempe, oftentimes we let our fosters name them. And Laura, shout out Laura, she's a longtime animal advocate and is plant-based and vegan. And she's like, can I name him Tempe? Which is a plant-based protein.
That's fantastic.
So she named him Tempe. And then Gilligan, one of our longtime fosters, Will, he never bats an eye. We're like, hey, can you take this dog? And he's like, sure, I'll be there in 20 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
He had an uncle that was a redhead. And he wanted to name him Gilligan because of Gilligan Island and ginger, which was such a weird,
yes,
like, association. But that's how Gilligan. Both have been adopted. They are in the best homes. They're altered, vaccinated, microchipped, licensed. They're just the sweetest.
The whole nine yards. Oh, yep. That's such a great, and I didn't know they're happy
you.
New beginning. So there you go.
Good job, Jackie. Oh my gosh.
I love it. And I just want to mention real quick, it's so important. And for my listeners, I know that a lot of people reach out to me and say, what could I do? And people are hesitant to reach out via Instagram message or Facebook because they'll be like, oh, they never get back to you, or they'll never reply, or there's an auto reply. And I really appreciate that Hit Living Foundation actually looks at the messages and does respond, even if it takes a little time. I know, you know, you guys are busy and it's not like, you know, everyone has all the time in the world all the time with so mm-hmm. many dogs. But the fact that you replied, I mean, saved lives, or at least gave people the information so that they either knew to stick around or to go look somewhere else. Not every rescue replies. You know, even I have reached out to rescues and never heard back from them. So thank you.
Jackie, thank you. To toot our own horn, Jordy is our cheerleader today. Thank you.
Clearly, yes.
He's in the background. When the pandemic happened, we actually went viral, and a ton of people, the first thing they said every single time we connected, you're the only rescue that responded to us. You're the only rescue that called us about our, you know, foster application. So we've got a really wonderful team, and I think it's super important for us to make sure that we are extending an olive branch to anybody who, you know, needs help, guidance. Cuckoo Bananas here in LA with dogs. And so thank you for acknowledging that, because we're proud of that.
Yeah, I think it's super helpful. Also, and you know what? Even when the answer is no, or we're too busy, or we are full, I think people appreciate knowing that.
Absolutely.
Because if not, you're just kind of left hanging, feeling like, oh, they don't care. No one else is going to care. And then those people that maybe are not involved in rescue or adoption don't keep trying mm-hmm. instead of getting empowered and feeling hopeful. So your replies really do mean a lot. And I think they give an example of how we could all be that way. Just better communication.
Absolutely. And the rescues here in LA are so wonderful. Like, we've got a ton of sister rescues that we work with. That are powerhouses that, you know, do the best they can with the resources that they have. And I mean, that's all you can ask for in a
absolutely
state that there's just an influx always.
So tell us, and for our listeners who are not familiar with Hit Living Foundation, when and how did the organization get started?
Yeah. So Heather Crow, she's actually our founder. And in, like, funny enough, she and I were both volunteering with Animal Hope and Wellness Foundation. And in 2018, we met during the Woolsey fires. Do you remember that?
Yes. Oh, yes. That was a rough time here. Yeah.
So we were a part of a just like rescue mission that was granted permission to go beyond the barricades, to go into the homes and pull cats from the houses, you know, everything from like tortoises to pigs to chickens. So Heather basically was kind of a one woman show. It was just her, her mom, her sister, Susie and Amber, shout out. And then her fiance, Brian. Lots of shout outs in this one, I think.
Good. We love it because we want to applaud everyone who's making an effort to help this cause. You know, it's a big deal.
It takes a village.
It does.
We all, yeah. Everyone in rescue, I think that's like our hashtag, it takes a village. But so to kind of make the long story short, they were kind of just operating with minimal resources. And somebody had reached out to Alex, my husband, and I, and was like, hey, Heather and her mom and her sister, they've got a llama, they've got ducks, they've got chickens, there's a goat, there's a huge tortoise, like there's a rooster. They don't have anyone to help them. Can you go and like just help feed them, clean them, like give them a break? And so that's pretty much how we really kind of established our relationship. But Heather started the foundation in 2018, and her and her fiance travel essentially back and forth from the Bahamas, and she rescued a Bahamian pot cake. All of the dogs in the Bahamas are pot cakes because they eat the leftover rice at the bottom of the pot, which is a cake. And anyway, she brought the dog over and kind of was like, I think I can do this. I think I'm really good at this. So she started the HIT Living Foundation, and the HIT Living Foundation is kind of more of a lifestyle, I have to say. Like, our mission basically is honesty, integrity, and trust. And basically, I think you would agree, and anyone listening, if you can just always come from a place of honesty, a place of integrity, and a place of trust, you can't go wrong, right? Like I think always going to come from a state of compassion and understanding when you're focusing on those three main points. And so I think everyone on the team, like, we really just do our best if we're struggling to kind of reach out to each other and say, like, I'm having a burnout moment. I need to take a beat. And we all show up for each other. And then that, you know, essentially just like bleeds into every other, you know, facet of, I think, animal advocacy, you know, running the foundation and everything that goes in between. So 2018 is when it was started, and we've never looked back.
Awesome. HIT Living. And I love that. Honesty, integrity, trust.
And trust, yep.
You can use that for in life to be like, are you HIT Living?
Exactly.
We actually like, I'm gonna use that now.
No, it's please do, because it really is a lifestyle. Like, it's almost like Buddha-esque. At the end of the day, it's just being honest with yourself and what you can handle, trusting the process and the people that are helping you, and just being having that integrity to show up every day to be your best self, even if you're struggling, because you're going to fall and we're going to catch you.
That's awesome. And you know what? That's really important what you just said, being honest with yourself and what you can handle. Some people are not ready to handle pet ownership, being a pet parent. Some people cannot foster because maybe it is too much with your schedule. But some people are afraid of it, thinking they can't handle it. And guess what? Maybe you can. And you may as well just reach out and find out what it entails, because maybe you can foster for 2 weeks or a month. It doesn't have to be for months and at a time, you know. So I always encourage people to ask questions and figure out with the different organizations in your area. If you're in the Los Angeles area, find out if there's anything you can do or have time for to help HIT Living Foundation. Tell me, Kelly, what is your role in the organization? What are the tasks that you perform for this ship to sail?
Awesome. So I joined initially as a volunteer, and now I'm the director of operations, and it's just been a really wonderful journey. And I think for the most part, my main like goal is to just make sure that, you know, everybody is kind of on a nice trajectory, so that we are crushing our goals, but also like checking in with everyone to make sure that like we, you know, are able to get to the applications in a timely manner. What dogs, you know, are available for adoption, what dogs need to be introduced to our social media audience, Do we have adoption events planned? You know, how many dogs can we bring in this month with the, you know, funds available? So it's pretty standard, like, director of operations stuff. But I think because we've got such a great team, it makes it pretty easy. We've built out the foundation into the departments. So we have different departments. We've got our adoption team, we've got our foster team. We have, you know, our social team, and then our medical team. And basically, anytime we have questions, we kind of just go to the main department to just say, like, hey, I think, you know, this dog, you know, still needs a medical. When can we get that booked? And we have a pretty good flow on just, like, timelines. So when a dog comes into our care, we generally, you know, do a 7-day kind of decompression phase so that they can come into the foster home and just kind of relax, you know, get some of their adrenaline, cortisol levels to a normal baseline. And then we link up with our vet. Obviously, if they're in, you know, grave medical condition, or they've got kennel cough, or which is, you know, upper respiratory infections, absolutely we get them in. But if they're generally healthy, you know, we'll give them a nice time to just kind of hang out. And then we have fosters who fill out like a foster pup intel form. It's like a little report card.
Okay.
So that we know
Cute.
What they're struggling with, what are some really, you know, unique habits that they might have. And then we can kind of build a profile for them. So then when we're ready to get them adopted, or that they're healthy enough to move into, you know, foster to adopt, we have everything kind of built out. So it's just super clean and seamless. So yeah, so basically the flows, I think, are really important, just so it's easier for everyone. As you all know, rescue is cuckoo bananas. And so because of that, being able to just, you know, make sure that things run smoothly is a huge bonus. That way,
absolutely,
everyone can kind of take a breath, and we can trust each other that, like, oh, this is like standard operating procedure. This is what we do. If I don't know what to do here, I've got a group of, you know, team members that I can jump in and say, like, I forget, what's the next step here? That's pretty much my role. And I love it. It's my favorite.
You know, I love that you're explaining all that, because those of us not in rescue, not involved in either running or volunteering on a daily basis with an organization, kind of don't know the ins and outs. We think just, maybe we just picture, before I was in rescue, you just picture people taking care of dogs, and somebody applies and somebody approves, but you don't see the ins and outs, and it's a lot. So I think the organization is as strong as you have described because of the leadership and how things are delegated and how organized it is. And, you know, an organization is only as strong and as successful as its leader. So
Oh my gosh.
I think it's really great that you guys have, you know, with Heather and everyone on board, have really set out these different departments, as you call it. And I'm sure a department is like, you know, a handful of volunteers. But mm-hmm. still, you know, I don't want our listeners to think it's some big corporate operation, because it usually never is. I mean,
it's
always
yep.
small group. Yes, of volunteers, of animal loving men and women who just want to give their time and sometimes be, you know, when there is. Sometimes there are paid positions in organizations, and that's something we've talked about, because people need to understand that those positions need to exist and funding needs to exist for those positions, because if not, then when you're dealing with only volunteer, then there's only people available when people's schedules allow it, because they have to have an entire full-time job and career outside of volunteering. And if that phone rings or those DMs come in, there's no one to pick them up. It's, you know, whereas when you're allowed to have and able to, through the nonprofit, have those paid positions, somebody's there 24/7. And I really love that. I think it's important, given obviously the crisis we have in this country with homeless dogs.
Absolutely. And I'm so thankful that you touched on that, because I think, you know, as someone who started as a volunteer and looking back, especially during the pandemic and during like the natural disasters that we were having, easily 16, 18 hours a day, just on the phone with the shelters, on the phone vetting applications for fosters, on the phone with adopters, setting up meet and greets. You know, some dogs need multiple meet and greets. So we call that like a dating process, you know, so you're scheduling multiple, you know, meets and, you know, transportation. A lot of people, I think, don't realize that the rural shelters are the ones that need the most help, because most regular folks aren't getting out to them. So like the DeVore Animal Shelter, which is, you know, an hour and a half away. I'm in the Valley. So like, you know, Carson and Downey, that's easily an hour. So factoring all of that in, you've got to bathe the dogs, you know, you've got to get their supplies together to make sure that the foster advocate is set up. So there's so many things that go into it. And actually, to your point, Jackie, of like talking about, you know, different things that people can do, or like how, you know, they might be able to offer their services. You know, there's so many things in rescue outside of just fostering and adopting. If you ever want to, you know, be a transport volunteer, that's one of the best things to do, because you have the dog in your car. Most of them are in crates, but sometimes if it's just like a really kind of A-plus dog where they just, you know, they've been, it's not their first rodeo in a car, so they can kind of just like chill out. It's so fun for, you know, these transport volunteers to kind of have these one-on-one moments and be such a, you know, integral part of this dog's journey to make sure that they're getting to the vet or they're getting to, you know, the groomer. So transport volunteers are amazing. We have foster welcome kits. So if anyone ever wants to come to my house or Heather's house, we have Courtney, who is our director of development. She's in Torrance, if you're close to her. We just build these foster welcome kits that have everything that a foster family will need.
That's so cool.
And then they pick them up and nobody has to worry. And in terms of like having supplies and enrichment activities, foster families don't have to worry about those things. It's all preset. And so if you ever want to just come and hang and do some foster welcome kits, we'd love to have you.
Oh, I love that. Because yes, there are ways that we can give back. And, you know, sometimes, you know, for buying dog food or dog treats, maybe if our listeners, you know, want to get in touch with an organization, there are certain foods and treats that organizations do give their dogs. Sometimes it can't be random, and it's not because they're picky or, you know, people don't turn their nose up at things. It's just that with dogs having sensitive stomachs, with them having certain needs or possible allergies, and I've learned this through my own pack, I can't just give them any food. So whereas I know that people have the best of intentions when they want to donate, I've learned to check in with the organization or go on their Amazon wish list. Mm-hmm. And you guys have one, yes?
We do. Yeah, we actually have a Great. Few different lists, because we do have the international efforts in the Bahamas. So we have a list specifically for that. And then we've got like mama and puppies, mama cats and their kittens. So if there's something in rescue that you love more than others. I know a lot of people love cats and they're not super into dogs, but they still want to help. We've got lists for that. So,
okay. Yeah. Great. So yeah, again, you guys have heard me say it, and I'm going to say it again. There's no excuse not to help.
Yes.
So,
bless you, Jackie.
Having said that, tell me, Kelly, what are obviously some of the obstacles? You have this, seems, in although a very young organization, a very well-oiled machine, which is very exciting and gives me hope, because we obviously now post-2020, there's an influx of homeless dogs. Sadly, many have been returned from adopters to shelters. You know, they didn't necessarily, families adopted from shelters and then have returned them now that their lifestyle doesn't allow them to have as much free time. It's unfortunate. What we try and do is educate and promote dog training, promote dog walking, promote whatever we can so people can keep their pets.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the obstacles that you are particularly facing as an organization with so many dogs in shelters in Los Angeles today?
That is a really epic question, I have to say, because I think there's a lot of different variables, but the two that stand out to me the most obviously are, you know, the shelter dogs that have been surrendered and, you know, doing everything we can to get them out of the shelter. In terms of, you know, owner surrenders, we have a form on our website specifically for owner surrender forms so that they can reach out to us. And when we receive those, our biggest goal, and I think most rescues in general, it's really trying to figure out, once we connect with those families, how we can keep the dog with them, right? Like, do they need medical assistance? Is it, you know, the dog is fine in the home, but it's, you know, sick. If it's, you know, a feline, do they need, you know, vaccinations? So medical stuff is always something that we, you know, want to find out if that's something they need assistance with. Is it food? You know, is it a family that is food insecure and they don't have the funds to, you know, take care of of their own family needs. And so being able to see, you know, their pet, most of them are devastated to see them go. And then I think the other issue is, you know, behavior modification. A lot of these people adopted during the pandemic, and we all know we weren't going anywhere. Like any, anytime we were going out, I mean, I think a lot of people in the animal medical world, there was a huge scare that, you know, COVID was transmittable between dogs as well. And so
we heard those rumors.
Yeah, we had vets explaining, like, you know, it's almost like kennel cough, like it's the same virus that we can get. So even our dogs need to be, you know, socially distancing. So the behavior modification, I think, is something that comes up a lot with the owner surrenders, because they just don't have the tools or the resources to be able to kind of finesse what might be going on with their dog. And so with those two issues, I think being able to give them the resources, we have a really wonderful trainer, Angela Aiden, who's with Deserving Dogs. She has been so gracious to us, and we were on a little bit of a hiatus right now, but last year, last summer is when we started doing bi-monthly training classes. And so we had current fosters with HIT Living Dogs come so that they could get just more knowledge and tools to be able to cater to their dog and get them adoption ready. Then we had families who were interested in adopting, who might be doing a foster to adopt, come and join, you know, those training sessions. And then post-adoption, having them come.
That is huge.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. We've had a lot of adopters reach out and just say, like, hey, having that extension to kind of help us build our confidence has been such an impact for their families, especially most everyone has a dog now, I feel like. So you have a dog and your siblings have a dog and you're going to mom and dad's who have a dog. So it's like, now we've got to introduce three stranger dogs, and how can we confidently and safely do that? So then, sorry, back to the owner surrender question, is extending that class to them and say, listen, would you feel comfortable coming, you know, with your dog and having as many family members that are available, and we can kind of assess them. We can give some, you know, pointers. We can kind of see how things are going. And if you feel comfortable, we can give you guidance. And how would you feel having that type of resource, keeping your dog? And it hasn't been a ton, but I will say,
are there some that say yes?
Yeah. And we've been able to, you know, assist them. And I think that that's just what it's all about, because we have to show up for each other. And with California and the shelters, it's, you know, it's always a Sophie's choice moment, because, you know, another answer to your question that, you know, things that we've been trying to navigate in this post-pandemic world is we don't have enough foster humans for foster dogs. And so when we see dogs that are rescue only, meaning they're not available to the public, or they, you know, have severe medical, you know, we have to be able to find fosters that are capable of taking care of these dogs. We have people all the time that are like, oh, they can stay here. And then when we talk to them, they're like, oh, I'm out of the house for 12 hours. My nanny doesn't like dogs, you know, and so it can be challenging. So with that being said, there's just, it's a puzzle every day. And we just all have to work together to kind of make sure that we, you know, find those pieces so that we can show up for the dog. But yeah, I think just to wrap that up, I think the two biggest things is, you know, the owner surrenders and trying to keep them with their owner. And then with the shortage of fosters is preventing us to be able to bring more dogs in to make space in the shelter.
Right. And what a wonderful thing that you're doing by providing this opportunity to work behavior modification, clear lines of communication between human and canine. It's mm-hmm. so important. And I harp on this, you know, all the time, because I just think that there is no bad dog. Matt Beisner, I don't know if you know him. He was on the podcast last season, and he has a show called Dog Impossible on Discovery.
Yes.
And he goes by, there is no bad dog. When I heard him say that, I thought, really? And it opened up my eyes to the fact that there isn't. It's just that they don't know how to tell us what's up with them, that what's going on, what they need. And we don't know how to understand or express to them what we need. So there's this conflict. And rather than trying to resolve it with someone who can help us be a translator, like a dog trainer that is gentle and kind and knows how to translate for us what we have to do for the dogs, people just go, ah, turn them into the shelter.
Right. You know? Oh my gosh. On that note, have you heard, do you know Billy Chin?
I don't.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Just to your point of like being able to, you know, communicate with your dogs because they are nonverbal. If everyone wants to run, don't walk, Google Lily Chin. She is an artist and she basically just does dog related art, but she has a book called Doggy Language, and it literally, she's worked with a ton of certified dog trainers, dog, you know, canine behaviorists, and it's like a book that I really, if I was a millionaire running this rescue, I would literally make sure that every volunteer, every person, like Oprah, you get this book, you get this book, you get this book, because it breaks it down so well. Being able to see these images of a dog, you know, his ears are back, his tail is tucked, he's turning sideways.
What does that mean?
What it means, yeah.
Okay.
And especially if you have children, it's so helpful to be able to say like, oh my gosh, I think, you know, Jordy, if you look at this picture, he kind of looks like he's a little bit nervous. Maybe let's give him some space, you know, or like, what does a growl mean? A growl is totally fair response for a dog to say like, I need some space, you know? So anyway, I'm just right there with you. And Lily Chin, you ought to check her out because it's exactly what you were just explaining. Yeah.
We will. And it's so funny when you say, if I were a millionaire, because I would say, if I were a millionaire, I would do spay-neuter events in every city of the United States.
Oh my gosh, yes. I would do so many things, yes.
And I would provide dog training, you know, I would meet with trainers and say, okay, who can we, because obviously dog trainers, they have to make a living. They have to, by devoting themselves day in and day out, 24/7 to the care of dogs and the proper, you know, communication and things they're going to teach dog parents after the dog goes back to the dog, especially if it's a boarding situation. So it is expensive. A lot of people cannot afford it or keep it up because of the consistency that needs, you know, to be part of that learning. But I really do promote it. And if I was a millionaire, I'd be like, dog trainers, where are you? Because I'm coming after you, to help every rescue and every family. But so at least, you know, we're offering hope. There are resources. There are ways to help each other. And I think that's what this podcast is really about. It's not that we have all the answers. It's not that we can solve every problem, but we can move forward and make things better in any one area. So
absolutely.
Yeah. And on that note, tell me a little bit about, you know, we're saying there's a doggy there with you that had separation anxiety. So let's talk a little bit about her and her story and where she's at in her journey right now.
Yes. So her name is Ellie, formerly known as Sally. She is a cutie little Cocker Spaniel. She was a Hot Mess Express from one of the rural shelters. I think she was from Downey or Carson. And she just broke our hearts. And we learned really quickly that she had separation anxiety. So Angela, who I mentioned before, one of our trainers, said, this is kind of something I'm really sensitive with, and it's a specialty of mine, like have her come and stay with us. So Sally moved in with Angela as essentially her foster, and kind of just went through all of the, you know, ebbs and flows of how to identify separation anxiety. There's, you know, not a lot of research in the past, but there's a ton now. And one thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is SA truly is like, they're having a panic attack. It's not something that, you know, there's different levels, of course. I'm not an expert. Marlena Dimitri is amazing, if you've heard of her. She's a really wonderful SA trainer. But some signs to look for with separation anxiety is, you know, vocalizing in the house, elimination in the house, and, you know, destructive behavior. Ellie hit all of those. She just, you know, could not get to a place where she could be calm, where she could be left alone. And so the reason she's here now is she's actually been adopted by this really wonderful woman named Jennifer. But with separation anxiety, this is another way, if anyone wants to get involved with rescue, or just, you know, showing up for people in your community. People who adopt separation anxiety dogs, they need help. Like, certain dogs cannot be left alone. Like, we have one dog named Gus who was a pandemic dog, and he could only be left alone for, I think, like 17 seconds.
Wow.
Without having a major panic attack, like foaming at the mouth, like trying to, you know, claw his way through the door, like really scary stuff. 2 years later, he's at 80 minutes. So he can be left alone for 80 minutes. That's huge, you guys.
Oh, you just gave me the chills.
Yeah, that's such a huge jump. And, you know, the owners and him didn't get there by, you know, shifting their whole entire life. And thankfully, they are work from home. But my point is Ellie is here today so that Jennifer can go run her errands, can go have lunch with a friend, can... I think she's got like a dental appointment. Jennifer, sorry if this is TMI, but the point is, you know, with separation anxiety, you have to have that community. Most separation anxiety trainers encourage you to go on Facebook, on Nextdoor, get in touch with your neighbors and just say like, are any of you able to come and hang out with her, you know, for 2 hours while I go do this thing? Because oftentimes dogs with separation anxiety don't generalize. I mean, most dogs don't. And so because of that, when they're left alone, it's a hard reset and it's a panic. But if they have the tools and they've gone through the different motions to kind of get to that 80-minute mark like Gus, it's huge. So anyway, Ellie's here and she will not be left alone at all today. I'll go off and do some things that I need to get done. But my husband, Alex, will be here. And, you know, just
yay, Alex.
Sure. Yay.
We love the supportive husbands and partners and all the men in rescue. I always give a shout out to because it is mostly women. You know, that's just the way it is. But I am seeing more men, more husbands, boyfriends, brothers, friends getting involved.
I'm going to shout out all of the men literally doing something on a regular basis within our foundation. So we've got Brian. He is Heather's fiance. We've got Alex, my husband. He is going through a dog certification training course. So he's helping with, you know, any kind of hiccups that might pop up within our foster dogs. We've got Greg and Marco, who are phenomenal volunteers that show up for every dog. They never bat an eye. We've got Will, who's like our finance director. I'm missing other people, but like we have so many amazing, compassionate men in our lives.
Great.
That say yes to us taking another dog into our house when we already have six.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Hence the photo of the podcast cover is me and my six dogs because it was either that or maybe, you know, my husband would not have
the alternative.
A home. Just
kidding. Yep. No, that's so funny.
No. But, you know, we have to. And I always use the excuse, honey, we're saving lives.
Literally.
You know, when people go, it's not brain surgery. Well, we're saving lives. So there.
No, good for you. Six is a big pack. That is amazing.
It is.
Heather, our founder, has seven. Yep.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah. And, you know, it's not like we planned it. You don't plan on saying, I'm going to have six dogs.
Mm-hmm.
We had two and then three. And we had three for a while when this journey began. It was like a foster here, foster there, heartworm positive. I'll take care of him in the meantime until he heals. You know, mama with puppies, puppies all got adopted. Mama's still sitting there for a year. I'm like, all right, come to my house, you know. So there's that. And that's how we got six and five are pity mixes and one is a pug.
Oh, I love it.
So, you know, we try to show people also with our six-year-old son that the pity type dogs are the most wonderful, loving, loyal, playful, caring dogs.
They are.
Because the breed does get a bad rap, and we've discussed this on the podcast. So to anyone who doesn't know or has never met a pit bull type dog, we also say, meet one, you know, go to the events for the different rescues, follow their pages and look at all the wonderful stories happening each and every day for this wonderful breed that gets overlooked or vilified in so many ways.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's great to know on your point about separation anxiety that it can be improved. It should not be ignored or get rid of the dog because they have that if you're willing to do some work, and we have to work toward everything, you know, everything is not just easy in our lives. We all know that with work, with school, with family, relationships. So with our dog, it's another relationship, it's another family member. We've got to put some work into it. When it's separation anxiety, yeah, it's hard, but it's also heartbreaking. So if you don't handle it, it's just going to get worse and stressful for everybody. It's so nice to know that it can be improved. You know, I have one that I didn't realize it was separation anxiety. He was just a very fearful dog. And the thing is, he's so darn good looking that everybody wants to say hi to him. Yes. Oh. So of course, you know, but long story short, he can't be alone for more. I would say he's okay for about an hour and 45 minutes.
Okay.
And we leave him fenced off in our office with nothing that he could get into because he will, from anxiety, chew blankets, toys, my son's toys. You know, I don't care what gets ruined. It's more about him getting something stuck in his intestines. And, you know, we want to make sure we care for these dogs so that they don't hurt themselves. I know you were mentioning that about the dog panting a lot and all that. Mm-hmm. It's why we can't leave Hunter in a crate because he will pant so much. He'll like pass out. So, you know, it's hard. But we have made the necessary arrangements so that in our lives, we come and go as we please. We make it work. We found a way and he's always okay.
Way to go. That's really wonderful, especially that you guys have the ability to kind of section him off in an area where he is able to, you know, safely exist.
Yeah, it's like his little safe haven.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And just for everybody like listening, you know, I've only really started to learn about separation anxiety within like the last 3 years. And it's just, it's a very fascinating, it's not even like a behavioral issue. It's just, you know, like us, if we have, you know, a chemical imbalance or if we have, you know, anxiety, there's tools that we learn to make sure that we feel safe and that we can get our, you know, ourselves to a state of being able to feel safe and be calm. So anyway, I think just if anyone is ever interested, Milena DeMartini, she is the expert. She's wonderful and she's got so many wonderful resources for anyone that might be struggling with that. So
absolutely. And I know a lot of people do. So thank you for sharing that information with us. We're going to add, you know, all the information in the show notes for this episode that you talk about so people can access it. So on a personal note, Kelly, with everything we've talked about and the whole movement of saving lives with dogs, how do you personally keep going? What makes you get up and do this all over again every day?
So I love that you have asked that because I feel like it ebbs and flows.
I'm glad you're laughing. That's a good thing. At least you're not crying.
No, I did that yesterday.
Okay.
No, it definitely ebbs and flows. Like, I mean, I think for me personally, you know, I'm plant-based. I've been, you know, vegan for nearly 15 years now.
Wow. Okay.
I grew up with a mother who was an animal rescuer. We had a little like side business in Arizona when I was really little. We would find strays all the time and I would just walk them around the neighborhood and everybody knew me as Kelly, who like was reuniting these stray dogs with their owners. And just animal advocacy comes really natural to me, but I don't think, you know, it's something that everyone can handle all the time. And so you have to be able to, you know, step away. I remind our team all the time, like compassion fatigue is real. Like rescue, if I could put it in a nutshell, generally feels like the emergency room. Like you're just always, you have to make split decisions. You have to put plans together really quickly. And so for me, it's, you know, communicating with the team and just saying like, I'm kind of burnt out right now. I'm going to take, you know, a couple of days.
Good.
Or, you know, finding a really good book or, you know, I walk dogs a lot. So just listening to podcasts and, you know, shutting off my notifications so that I can just kind of like jam out. That's really, really helpful. You know, having a spouse who's also in the rescue world, it can be a little consuming, you know, we're constantly, you know, showing an improvement on, you know, a dog that, you know, might not have been doing so well after they exited the shelter, or showing each other a dog that is on death's door that we're trying to figure out how we can, you know, pull from the shelter. And I think just in any type of organization or animal advocacy, human advocacy, you do have to check in with yourself and make sure that you are taking care of yourself. You can't fill from an empty cup, you know? And I think a lot of us forget that, or I know I struggled a lot with feeling shame and guilt for not getting more dogs that day or not following up with those people that texted me, you know? And so being able to put it into perspective and just take a breath and just know that you are doing the best that you can and allowing yourself to just step away, even if it's just like, you know, you're going to go around, you know, the block for a walk, or if you have a Peloton, you know, getting on that, like having hot tea in the backyard, anything that like makes you
recharging.
Yeah. Anything that helps you recharge and you can kind of just have like a moment to yourself. If you have a mantra, you know, I think those are all really helpful. Then you can kind of jump back in.
Right. Yeah. Just to your point real quick, I will say we should do that with everything, whether we're an accountant, a teacher, you know, working in corporate America or an artist. We all need to step away from that which we do and recharge and take a breath of fresh air and then come back to it. So animal advocacy and rescues is no different.
Absolutely.
Thank you for that message. I wanted to bring attention to something that I know Heather had mentioned. You guys had this lovely fundraiser recently that I attended, the soiree in Hollywood.
You were there? And, yes.
Yes. It's so beautiful. And Heather spoke about her spay-neuter efforts in the Bahamas. You know, we're hoping to touch base next season as we're nearing out season two. But in season three, we'd like to come back with more episodes with why U.S. organizations should and do help international organizations and the cause abroad. You know, sometimes there is the conversation of, well, we have so many dogs here. You know, why are we helping dogs over there? And I have posed that question to other rescue organizations who have given me extremely valid and sound answers. Can you expand a little bit about that? And then, of course, we'd love to have Heather on the podcast tell us in the future about why helping out dogs in the Bahamas, particularly right now, is a good thing.
It's such a good thing. I've heard, you know, the kind of argument for both. And for me personally, if it's something good, why not try it? We know that the United States has puppy mills. We know that there are, you know, animals being exploited all the time. And having the spay and neuter projects here has done wonders. And so being able to extend that to other countries, especially countries that are second homes, like the Bahamas literally is Heather's second home. So like,
okay,
why wouldn't she want to, you know, bring those resources, that education, that health and safety to other dogs? I don't know the exact numbers, but during Hurricane Dorian, the government basically said no to evacuating pets to Florida. And so animals were just left behind, many of them not altered. And so fast forward 2 years later, statistically doing the math on how often, you know, females can be impregnated. They can have up to 3 sires, you know, so the amount of puppies that are being born multiplied like crazy. And
wow.
So it's just, I think it's super important to be able to do that. We did a spay and neuter clinic in Cuba, and Heather can definitely explain more about that when she's on. We did a bunch of stuff with a couple rescues in Tijuana, getting them here. Some of the dogs we didn't even actually bring on to the HIT Living Foundation, but we gave them, you know, financial resources to get them spayed and neutered. Because at the end of the day, like, this is more of like a personal statement, but I feel like rescue often is just a band-aid. You know, we're all doing our best with what we have, but the greater picture is education so that people know that the dogs that are at pet stores are from breeders. And, you know, educating why it is important for the health and safety of your dog to spay and neuter. Some people look at spay and neuter projects as, oh, we're just keeping the numbers down. But by spaying and neutering dogs, you lessen their chance of certain cancers. You lessen their chance of having major medical stuff that pops up later, you know, pyometra, things that are just really devastating if they go untreated. And so then you have dogs in the Bahamas or other countries that get infections and they're miserable. Like, if we're trying to be animal advocates, let's do it everywhere. If we have the resources, we have the time, we have people feeling passionate about it, let's run towards that and do whatever we can to make sure that we can make it happen.
Absolutely. Thank you. Beautifully said. I don't even know what to say to that, except you've moved me. Thank you. And it's true. You know, I think it's also another way to prevent people from turning their dogs into shelters. If you know anyone who needs help, let's convince people to accept help, because sometimes people don't accept help and it's there.
Yeah.
And dogs don't need to suffer needlessly, and they don't need to end up with pyometra and on a concrete floor behind bars in a shelter, because the shelters don't have the funds to treat something like that. So prevention. And you know, people sometimes don't put as much money into prevention as they do into the bleeding, dying dog in somebody's arms, right? So if we could start to switch that in our brains and think, like, why wait? Why wait until something's actually happening? I think it's just for the United States, it's just a thing of, that's how our society kind of works. It's how we're programmed. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes even law enforcement. You know, police officers, they have a heart, they love animals, and they want to help. And guess what? They can't in a given situation, because the law says they can't, unless something, you know, unless literally someone's dying and it's like happening in front of your eyes, they're like, oh, sorry, we can't help you prevent this because the laws don't exist. So that's also yes. why we push for lobbying, for advocacy, for voting for all those bills. When you see posts, people are actively trying to make change to have more animal protection laws, which will also help humans. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people say, oh, well, you know, we don't even protect humans. How could we care about the animals? It has to start somewhere. Is what I say.
I think that's really what it's all about at the end of the day, is like showing up for the vulnerable. You know, animals, while they cannot speak, they're communicating with us all the time. You know, people who, you know, especially in California, who are, we're going through a houseless pandemic, you know, showing up for them and making sure that we're able to advocate for them. And so I think with everything that's going on with, I think, puppy mills, spay and neuter initiatives, lobbying, like you said, like Bailing Out Benji is a really wonderful podcast.
Oh,
love them.
Yes, I love those girls.
They are doing so much for lobbying and laws and getting bills passed specifically to make sure that, you know, animals are safe, you know, and that goes, you know, into like the agriculture business. So it's just, we're all connected.
We're all connected.
Oh, we just said that at the same time.
Yes.
Okay, yes. If people are wanting to do good and you can help them do good, do the best you can to help them do that good. And
yeah, do something.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was a little tangent, but
no, but it speaks to the fact that we're not here just to advocate for, oh, rescue a dog, adopt a dog. It's a bigger issue. It really touches upon society, human life, quality of life, hygiene, protection, you know, our laws. So it trickles down no matter what. And so when people think, why should I care about a dog podcast or a podcast about dog adoption and rescue? For a lot of reasons. Because it's going to affect you or your neighbors or your community in some way if we don't get this problem under control.
Mm-hmm. The only other thing I was going to mention, and maybe you were going to ask something to this effect, but one of the things that sets HIT Living Foundation apart from other rescues, we all show up and, you know, do the same work and do the best that we can. But we started an initiative to get all of our volunteers trained in the Fear-Free Shelter Program. Have you heard of that?
Oh, no, I haven't.
So basically the Fear-Free program, it basically is getting organizations, animal rescue, who is literally handling, you know, dogs and cats from the moment that they're, you know, exiting the shelter to when we're getting them, you know, bathed at Petco Unleashed or, you know, moving them to their foster. The Fear-Free mm-hmm. program basically breaks down the FAS, which is fear, anxiety, and stress. And so it allows our team, especially when we're in the shelters, when they have notes like aggressive or possible fear biter, to be able to kind of look at the dog and see how they're communicating with us. Then once they're in our care, if they're starting to back up or like shriek or, you know, do certain things, our team is going to be able to have the tools to be able to say like, okay, I need to give this dog some space. Yep, we're going to give him some space and we're going to try it again. So it's just like a really wonderful program, and it basically just like increases enrichment opportunities for pets. It gives, you know, empowerment and ways that we can apply strategies and techniques to reduce negative emotion with the animals that come into our care. And so
that's awesome.
It's really something I'm super proud of, because we've got so many different volunteers with different walks of life. You know, we've got some volunteers that big dogs kind of freak them out. They don't feel so comfortable with them. And being able to give them the tools and ultimately getting this fear-free shelter certification, they're going to have so many things in their tool belt to be able to, like, even if they don't feel comfortable being hands-on, they can say like, okay, I think this dog is really nervous right now, or I think they're frustrated, or this excitement has turned into frustration. It's not aggressive. It's just, you know, it's so if anyone has the time, if you're a rescue and you're listening to this, I would definitely check out the fear-free shelter program. It's been eye-opening.
Yeah. And that's wonderful, because it gives you more hands on deck. You know, you don't have to wait to save a dog because you only have one or two qualified people to go in and pick them up and get them. You have more people that are knowledgeable and experienced in this area. So that's really cool. And I will look into that as well, because I didn't know about it. So tell us where our listeners can find, follow, and support HIT Living Foundation, and how we can follow the journey of some of these beautiful dogs that you save.
Oh my gosh, yes. We've got a really wonderful social team. And so I think one of the best ways is on Instagram and Facebook. We're at HIT Living Foundation. You can check our website out, which is hitlivingfoundation.org. Our social media, all of it's on our website. And if you miss the May Day Soiree, you will not want to miss the next event that we have planned. It is, I mean, Jackie, you saw how magical the May Day event was.
Yes, it's wonderful.
So yeah, that's pretty much what we have going on.
Okay. And yes, for anyone who, you know, obviously is not in Los Angeles or able to attend the events, if there are rescues in your area or even shelters that put on programs with fundraising events or just events that you can attend for free, believe me, it's such a nice way to connect with other people that are standing behind a great cause and that sort of just have that sense of wanting to do something, and you might not know what you want to do. But then when you meet them at an event, it takes all the pressure off of, you know, the logistics of dog rescue and kind of puts you in a different environment where you can maybe take in the information better and ponder upon it and consider, you know, volunteering, donating, or attending some of these events. I will have those live links in the show notes for this episode so anyone can easily click and find HIT Living Foundation. I also want to let our listeners know that I am not getting paid to advocate for any organization or individual on this podcast. I choose to interview guests from organizations that I know are doing the good work for dogs and for people across America, and in this case, abroad. Thank you so much, Kelly, for this very insightful conversation and inspiring us with more information, more resources, and more places to help and to give back.
Oh my gosh, Jackie, that is my pleasure, and this has just been wonderful.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh my gosh, keep doing what you're doing. This is amazing. You've got a fan out of me. I was listening to some of your episodes before, so thank you for doing this. You're making a huge change.
Oh, thank you. Honesty, integrity, and trust. After listening to this conversation with Kelly, how are you feeling when you hear those words? Let's take those words with us throughout our day, and let's ask ourselves, are they values that paint a picture of how we want to show up in the world? And if your answer is yes, then I invite you to go to the HIT Living Foundation website, where you will see a phrase that reads, "We welcome you to join us in our mission." Sign the pledge and live every day in honesty, integrity, trust. Whether you live in Los Angeles, the Bahamas, or anywhere in the world, there is something you can do to give back and contribute to this cause. And HIT Living is a perfect place to start. Thank you for listening to this episode. Please press subscribe on our podcast and tell all of your dog-loving friends about it. Until next time, Hang on to those leashes. The canine condition. Come, sit, stay.